This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Steph on Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today it is time for another edition of Female First, which means we are once again thrilled to be joined by the wonderful, the winning, the winsome Eves Defcoat.
Welcome, thank Eves. You. Happy to be yes. here. What does winsome mean?
Yeah, winsome I was going to ask the same thing. You have,
well, somebody described me as winsome on their podcast, and I had to go look it up. Winsome is just kind of like charming, like winning personality. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a compliment. It's good.
Okay, I'll take it. I'm here for it. I mean, I figured from the prefix that winsome would be pretty good. Context clues, but I really did not know what it meant. But I'm here for a little adult vocabulary learning. I was watching the Spelling Bee when it was back on a few weeks ago, and I was like, wow, I want to be like them. You know, I had a little bit of Spelling Bee aspirations when I was young, but those never materialized into anything.
Wait, Annie, you won something, right? I was in a contest. I did not last. But Annie, you actually won a spelling bee contest, yeah?
I did. I went to state, which is so sad now because I really blame spell check, but I am not as good of a speller anymore. But I was good back then. Mm-hmm. But the word that I failed, I'm so mad about it because I knew how to spell it. It was aggravate. And I said, A-R, and you can't go back. And I immediately was like, dang. All right, goodbye.
Oh, that wither away.
Did you like walk away with your shoulders hunched over and your head down?
I was mad. I was like visibly angry.
That's worse than like spelling it wrong and not knowing that you're spelling it wrong.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. I like remember. So, and then somebody came up and asked me about it afterwards. And I was like, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. It's like losing on a technicality. This is like when people... When they go to judge's decision, when I'm watching UFC, I'm like, I need a clear win. Why are the judges deciding this? Right. Who beat who up? That's what I need to know.
Like the little competitions for like gymnastics. I did cheerleading inside look. But if you stepped off like a part of the mat, you were automatically disqualified. Yeah. So if any person like got off at a certain point, you're done. That was one of those moments of like, why? That was so, it wasn't based on our performance. It was literally something that was just a silly mistake.
Yeah. And it's all this anticipation and build up and, you know,
It's a lot of pressure. I'm surprised you watched that, Eves. That would, like, it makes me nervous when I watch stuff.
Yeah, like, well, I can't watch that either.
You know what? It's so wholesome. There aren't many things that are wholesome these days.
Yeah, that's true.
And just watching children spell, knowing that they're the future and they had the fortitude and the willpower and the focus and determination to study these words and their roots. And it's refreshing. It's lighthearted. And it's just like a breath of fresh air.
Okay. Wait, so did you have, like, were you rooting for someone specific? Did you have a favorite?
No, and I think that's another part of why it's so wholesome, because you're rooting for everybody. Like, there is no... For me, it was no competition. Like, it was like one person got out and I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. And the next person comes up, I'm like, yes, you got it. You got it. You can do it. It's just like never ending warmth, like running through my veins as I'm watching it.
I might just say you in general, because I have a feeling I'd pick someone out just for spite.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have weird hobbies. Anyway.
You're the one doing the online betting on this. Yes. You're the spelling bee.
On this
weird,
got
very
this.
Niche community of online bettors on spelling bee.
Yeah. I'm a win. Good to win. Let's go.
Well, kind of related. When y'all were young, did you ever imagine yourself either having your own show or being on like a interview show type situation?
I did not. So I guess I'll go first because my answer isn't that interesting. I did not. I watched interview shows when I was younger and liked that for whatever reason. My brain really liked that. But I did not ever want to be on a show. I'm also not a person who wants to be in the limelight anyway. Mm-hmm. So no, that wasn't me. I didn't want a real life show, like an interview show. I didn't want a fictionalized show. No, I couldn't imagine myself there. So what about y'all?
So that's the podcasters. Yeah, essentially in my head, I'm the cool person. So in that cool person zone, I'm very cool and collective and all my answers are amazing. In real life, I realize I freeze up real fast and I'm very anxious. I'm like, yeah, I can't do this. Why did I think I wanted to do this? But yeah, as a child, I'm like, yeah, this is absolutely, I could be an actress. I could be in a spotlight. I would be an amazing person to receive this award. This is the speech. And of course, I would give a speech about who I would think and all these things. And then in actuality, being in front of people now when we have like little panels or such, and I'm like, yep, nope, never mind. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Real life hits you hard.
Yeah, you're like, oh, no, no. Yeah, I'm not equipped for this.
Yeah. I feel like I went through a stage where it wasn't so much I wanted to be interviewed for anything, but I thought if I did do what I wanted to do, which was acting, I would have to be on there. So I would like kind of practice in my head what I would say, what like would be the funny quips I would have ready to go. And like, so it was a strange, like, now I'm with you, Samantha. I would freeze up. I would not be funny. I would obviously be like panicking and trying to play it cool. If I ever did become famous enough that they wanted me on an interview show, I would want to be one of those actors that just doesn't do it. You right. never see them.
You never see
circuit. That's the way to go.
That's what I want to.
Yes. Yeah. I want to do the thing I love and kind of be left alone about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How very artist of you to say that.
Not just me.
Just let me be. Let me do my art.
I have to say, it's very endearing that you plan out your witty things, because I think when you think of wit, it's something that comes spontaneously. So it's like let me be prepared to be off the cuff. Like, I could see you searching through, like, going through
the Rolodex in my head.
I was gonna say Rolodex too. I was like, that's gonna date me, but like, yes, Rolodex.
You know, that's like a whole thing in the Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, that he collects compliments to give to women so he can be prepared to give a off the cuff, spontaneous compliment that he's already thought of and written down. Like, that's part of his character, and obviously calling out why he's not so smart. No. But he has to do it. Not you, Annie. I love you.
I feel a little insulted.
Not you, Annie. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that's like what Jane Austen
being
did.
Insulted.
That's all right. You know, just behind the curtain. Like, I used to do that because I hate talking on the phone. So I would write out. Mm-hmm. I would write out, like, here are my bullet points of what we're going to talk about.
Right
here. So, like, literally.
It's a smart way to go.
You know, and now as you're listening to this podcast, you're like, what? Is this all practiced? No.
No.
I can be witty sometimes.
You're very witty all the time.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I am really excited to talk about the person you brought today, Eves. So who are we going to be discussing?
Today, we're going to be talking about Ethel Waters. And that's why we were talking about being in your own television show, because she was the first Black American to star in her own television show. So she had a bunch of other specific firsts along the way, but she generally was just a pioneering person when it came to theater and stage entertainment and television and radio. She was a singer and a little bit of a dancer. So she was multi-talented, that's for sure.
She was. She did a lot. Mm-hmm. As I was kind of researching, I was like, oh, and she did this. Oh, and she did this.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got quite the history. So shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's. So she was born on October 31st, 1896 in Chester, Pennsylvania. And her mother was Louisa Tarr Anderson and her father was John Wesley Waters. There is mention of rape here. So just a content warning before we get into that. John was a pianist who died when Ethel was pretty young. He wasn't really involved in her life anyway, though, and Ethel's grandmother raised her and didn't really want him around. It was said that Ethel herself said, and also said in Ethel's biographies, that John raped her mother when she was young, and that's how she was conceived. Her mother was a teenager, though her exact age at the time she was conceived is unclear, but it is thought that John was somewhere around the same age as Ethel's mother. But anyway, Ethel had a half-sister named Genevieve. And Genevieve was the child of Louisa and Norman Joseph Howard, who was Louisa's husband. So basically Ethel's stepfather. Genevieve is kind of described as being Louisa's favorite. So like I said, Ethel was raised by her grandmother. And there were times when Ethel would be back with her mother, but it seemed like there was this kind of tug of war between the two of them, between her grandmother and her mother. And when something went down, then she would get passed to her mother and then she would go back to her grandmother. But Ethel herself had this fondness and warmth that she clearly communicated in some of her quotes for her grandmother and how she raised her. That said, a lot of her childhood is described as being not the best. Ethel had an education, but as author Donald Bogle puts it in the biography Heatwave, it was a spotty education. Ethel was born in poverty and she had to fend for herself in many situations. So she would do things like run errands for pimps and sex workers to get money. And this seems like a thread throughout the rest of her life. So obviously I didn't know Ethel Waters personally, but there are biographies on her, and there are also statements from other people who worked with her throughout the rest of her life, and a general understanding of her persona in the public and kind of in her work life, in her career. And there seems to be this kind of through line for the hardness that she had to have as a young child and the hardness that she had to have as an adult, which is a very complex thing for a Black woman working in a difficult space. So I don't want to take that too lightly or be too flippant about it, because I know that things were very complex for her. But there's this idea that she didn't take BS from anybody throughout her life. And as Bogle also says in Heatwave, she developed a quote unquote tough girl persona. There was a woman named Butterfly McQueen, who Ethel later worked with on the show Beulah. And she said that, quote, she'd been to the University of Hard Knocks, so she used four-letter words. So Ethel was tough and her childhood was tough. So she was tough when she was young as well. She developed a deep connection to Christianity when she was young too. She went to Catholic school and she attended different denominations of Christian churches. So as a teenager, continuing this need to help support herself and support the family, she did domestic work. She did things like laundry. She cooked, did dishes, and did child care. And her income from these jobs helped her and her grandmother take care of the family. So we often hear this story, I think, in a lot of the Black women that we talked about, that they were doing domestic work around this time, so the early 1900s. She was relatively tall, too. She was at least taller than average, I will say. Not super tall. She was around like 5'9" by the time she was a teenager, which is something that's called out in the way that she, the presence that she demanded in spaces. And when she was 13 years old, she married a man named Merritt Pernsley. But that marriage didn't go well. He didn't seem to be a great person. And there was some abuse in that situation. She left that marriage after they'd been married for about only a year.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
So going into her talents, it seemed to be something that was in her family. So family members on both of her parents' sides had musical talent as singers and as pianists. But she said, Ethel said, that she never learned to play any instruments or read music, but she still went on to have this, you know, great career, of course. It's not like those are the defining things that means that somebody can be successful or have skill in the area. But yeah, so she began attending things in the arts and entertainment worlds, like vaudeville shows. She saw notable performers on stage who they sang, they danced, they did comedy acts and ventriloquism and things like that in those vaudeville shows. And it said in her biographies that she wasn't really set on becoming a performer. Like, she was like, I admire and appreciate the people who are out there doing those things, but I want to travel as a maid to a rich white woman. But she said that she did enjoy her own little performance and excitement in her daily life. She went out to clubs and she sang and danced when she went out with her colleagues when she worked at a hotel. So there is a story about how she got into performing, although by this point she had been doing a little performance. But she went to a party or a club on her birthday in 1917 where she sang in front of everyone. And there were a couple of agents there, Braxton and Nugent were their names. They were in the audience and they took an interest in her after seeing her perform. They had put people on the Chitlin circuit, which was where performers could go to Black theaters and clubs around the U.S. So this is how she started moving into her performance career. So she already was kind of surrounded by it. I mean, family-wise and the kinds of entertainment that they were doing, but also her own personal interest in attending and being in these arts and entertainment spaces and also performing herself. So it seemed like it was a kind of natural evolution into her making it a career. It was clearly something that she was interested in and a path that would potentially be viable for her, and others saw that in her as well. So Ethel started out on the vaudeville scene. And vaudeville, just for a quick overview of it, was a genre of theatrical entertainment that was popular in the late 19th and early 20th century. A vaudeville show was made up of a bunch of different kinds of acts. So it would depend on the show, but there would be things like song, dance, comedy, play skits, magic, and other things like that. So the Black entertainers who were in vaudeville, they had a really big influence on American jazz, comedy, and musical theater. And Ethel started out in this space. She started out playing that Black vaudeville circuit, which, of course, came with its own trials and challenges of, you know, sometimes going into white spaces and being on the Black vaudeville circuit. So issues of race did, of course, come up in her career. She started performing around the Baltimore area. Then she began touring the U.S. as a singer. And she had this nickname, Sweet Mama String Bean, which she was credited with sometimes, apparently because she was skinny. I don't really care for the name Sweet Mama String Bean. I'm not 100% sure like how frequently she was termed this, you know, if it was something she was solely billed at, or if it was like there were both names involved or whatever. But I don't think of string beans as something being a positive image. So I don't know. That's interesting to me. And also the fact that it's about like her body type is also a little weird. But I guess they did that with like bigger people as well, like use terminology in their names around that. But also still a little strange. Either way, that was what it was. And she performed in vaudeville houses in the South for a while, but eventually she made her way north to New York, where she sang in clubs in Harlem, notably a venue called Edmund's Cellar. And so she started doing recordings. She was doing these live performances too, but she also did recordings. She did her first recording with the Cardinal Company in 1921. And she later joined the Black-owned jazz and blues recording company called Black Swan, and she made records with them for a couple of years. And around this time, blues recordings were really popular, and particularly race records were popular, that kind of terminology that they've been given, which were songs by Black artists targeted at Black consumers. It was pretty straightforward, race records, and like, no, pretty much transparency about what they were doing and what they were for. But they were popular at the time. And in 1925, Ethel Waters took the place of the popular singer Florence Mills at the Plantation Club. And this was a big moment. There are a few big moments for turning points in her career, for her success. But she did a song, Dinah, and she started singing it there, and it became a big hit. And according to Stephen Bourne, in a bio he wrote about Ethel Waters, it was the first international hit to come from a nightclub review. So here she is growing in popularity. She's pretty, she's garnering attention around her name and around the work that she's doing. And she had a 10-year contract with Columbia Records. She started making recordings for them in 1925. And she moved on to Broadway. So in 1927, she had her first Broadway appearance in the production Africana. So she was clear about her talents. She knew what she had and what she was working with and wasn't afraid to transition into other fields that were related to what she was doing. So in 1929, she had her first on-screen appearance in the film On With the Show. And in that film, she performed the songs Birmingham, Bertha, and Am I Blue? That movie was marketed as the first all-color, all-talking all singing film, which feels like one of those very specific things versus like, you're really trying to get the first in. I get it. I'm not really sure what all singing means, all talking. But yeah, it was what it was. And Ethel was in it. And she was in many more Broadway shows and films after that. These shows were things like reviews. So a review is like a theatrical production that includes multiple acts like song, dance, and sketches. She was in short musicals and then eventually feature films. And she was performing alongside these other big names and with other famous people who were in Hollywood. So Stormy Weather was a song that was written by composer Harold Arlen and by lyricist Ted Kohler. And that was another of Ethel's hits. So if you go look up Ethel Waters, you'll probably see Stormy Weather come up. She sang it at the 1933 Cotton Club Parade, and it was well received there. So the Cotton Club was a venue that was in New York City, and the Cotton Club Parades were musical reviews that were held there, and they would do some of those annually. So according to the author Stephen Bourne again, he said that she'd always said that Stormy Weather was a turning point in her career. And she recorded it in May of that year for Columbia Records. So also, once again, if you like look up Stormy Weather, you'll see that other artists, plenty of other artists later recorded their own versions of that song. And they became associated with it and garnered that song more international attention and like also garnered more attention than Ethel Waters, kind of being more remembered for Stormy Weather than Ethel Waters was, even though she did get her credit for what she did with that song and how she popularized it. So yeah, so her career is taking off. She's getting work and she's garnering success for it. But of course, in the midst of all this career, you know, these people have their own personal lives to live. She got married a couple more times after that first marriage. That second time was to Clyde Edward Matthews, also known as Eddie. And then the third time, she wasn't married to him that long. And the third time, she was married to another Eddie, this time Eddie Mallory. So Eddie Mallory was a trumpet player, and the two of them went on the road together and they recorded together, but their relationship didn't last long either. That ended. But in Ethel Waters' biographies, it's said that she liked women romantically and had a romantic relationship with Ethel Williams, though Waters herself never really spoke about it publicly, but she was known to live with Ethel Williams. And people would say that she would be involved in queer communities in terms of them supporting her and her also like in life participating in those communities. So that is part of her story as well. But there's not like a lot of history or documentation or her talking about that as it often is. And like also it wasn't her job to do to speak about it publicly. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, at the time, Black performers were confined to these subservient roles in their character portrayals in integrated Broadway revues. But Ethel Waters got a starring role in the Broadway musical As Thousands Cheer. And a song that she sang in it, Supper Time, was about lynching. And Ethel talked about knowing a family that was, in her own statements, not in the song. Ethel talked about knowing a family that was affected by lynching and her own personal experience, saying that she had almost been lynched by a theater operator in my home state of Georgia. You really go back and like read stuff like this and you're like, oh, that's where I live right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was integrated and she got star billing, but she still couldn't be on stage with the white performers that were in the sketches and songs. But she continued to work in theater. And in 1939, she got her first dramatic role on Broadway in Mamba's Daughters, which was written by the author and playwright couple DuBose and Dorothy Hayward. They wrote it for Ethel. And this made her the first Black actress to get top billing in a play. And again, Black women were confined to this maid submissive role in dramatic productions as well. But she also did the musical Cabin in the Sky, which she's noted for, which opened in 1940. And that marked the first time a Black actress got solo billing above the title for a musical production. Ethel also played the same role that she did in the theatrical production and a 1943 film version of Cabin in the Sky. And that film had an all-Black cast. Notably, it also had Lena Horne in it. And there was some conflict at the time between her in the studio and how everything went down with the promo of that, because the studio had promoted Lena Horne, who was also in the film, as its star. So they were going out doing promo things. Like, Lena Horne was the one who was sent to do those things. And in Ethel Waters' biographies, there are quite a few situations or quotes in when it was clear that Ethel Waters was very circumspect and very cautious about the way people treated her in those spaces. She was used to being treated negatively by the white people who she was working with. And it was clear that she was very intentional about protecting her work and how she showed up in her workspaces and how she was credited. And like, it just seemed to be that she was really intentional about her legacy and the way that she was viewed and the way that others treated her. So at that time, you know, she was definitely like, I know what I'm worth. You know, I know how I should be credited. And when something wasn't to her liking, she was vocal about it. But yeah, so she didn't do another film after that until Pinky was released in 1949, which is about 6 years later. It was a hard time for all Black performers working or trying to work in Hollywood, but also particularly her, who had seemed to garner kind of a reputation about being difficult to work with from the producers, but also from some of her castmates. But Pinky was about a Black woman who passed for white. But the woman who was passing, who was supposed to be a Black person passing as white, was actually just a white woman. And her name was Jean Crane. And Ethel played her grandmother in the movie. Of course, there was controversy over that as well. And is one of those things that we still talk about, like, more so in terms of colorism, I think, today. Things like that come up because I don't know what studio would be so bold as to cast a passing person who was white these days. But there are still issues around, like, who's light-skinned, who's dark-skinned, and who's casting. So things like this, of course, happened at the time as well. And I know that even today, looking back at that, people who have our contemporary consciousnesses would feel differently about Ethel's portrayal of the grandmother, willingness to work in that film, and also the fact that they cast a white woman as a passing Black woman and didn't give the part to a Black person. But all of that notwithstanding, Ethel Waters was nominated for the Best Supporting Actress for the film Pinky. And it was the second time a Black performer was nominated in that category. So Ethel was offered a part in the play, The Member of the Wedding. And at first, she turned it down, kind of around this idea that it wasn't godly or spiritual enough for her. So the message that she was seeing when she initially reviewed it was like, I need more God in this, basically. But she eventually took the role after kind of, I guess, seeing it in a different way and seeing the spiritual relevance that it did have. So that play opened in 1950, and that marked a return to Broadway for her, which she wanted. And she also played in a film version of that that came out in 1952.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
There are, like I mentioned earlier, remarks from people about working with her, like people like Eartha Kitt and Katherine Dunham, which are big names in entertainment, on what it was like to work with her, the difficulty of working with her, but also how they learned from her. So I just don't want people to come away with this idea that Ethel Waters was very difficult to work with. Like, she was a mean person, and she clearly had a big personality, but the people who remarked on working with her, even if they didn't have the best experience of working with her when it came to like their personalities clashing, still talked about how they respected her, how they admired her for her work, and how they did learn from her as a person who was a pioneer in those entertainment spaces. So the kind of roles that Ethel Waters took, the stereotypes that she was relegated to, the characters that she chose to play, was a point of contention for her critics. So some of the work that she did was praised, and her acting or her singing was lauded, but of course, there was a lot of debate from Black people, white people, all people of all races in the United States about the content of her work and her choices of her work. But there was a quote from Ethel, and she said, "When Tales of Manhattan was released, various Negro organizations picketed the theater showing it. Their placards protested, picturing us colored people as wretched, dirty, and poorly clad. I didn't understand that. These same organizations were forever complaining that we Negroes in America are underprivileged. So why did they object to anyone showing us that way on the screen?" And that's the end of the quote. And there's also another article that said about her, quote, "She has done little in pictures because she does not care for the typed roles offered most of the Negro players, stars and otherwise." And this is what Ethel said in that article. "I'd rather stay home and look after little Ethel than accept some of the parts offered me," she told reporters recently. And that's the end of the article quote. So all of that said, there was not only, I think, as critics and as like viewers and consumers of media who care about things like portrayal and the way that things resonate within society, especially if it's something about Blackness in particular, which is what I know about, like specific to the demographic and how that affects us personally and affects views of us, is something that is imposed upon other people in their choices. In this case, it was all these people saying, you know, not a fan of the roles that Ethel chooses to take, you know, questionable ethics and not a fan of her work and the roles that she was taking. But it was clear that Ethel was also kind of going back and forth herself about the roles that she was taking. So saying that, "I'm not going to take any of those roles," but going on to take some of those roles and also being discerning about specific roles. So how is the actual character portrayed in a specific screenplay? Is there any nuance in depth and roundness to their character in that? So it's a complicated thing, and clearly is not something that can just be panned out as black and white on what was available to her at the time. Like, this was still a money-making endeavor, so she was doing things to be able to support herself as well, but also doing it for the artistry. So that in itself is a part of Ethel Waters' story, but also a part of so many other Black entertainers' stories at the time. Ethel Waters wasn't the only one who was dealing with questions like that. So she also had a history and a background in doing things in radio and television beyond her stage work and beyond her work in film. So in 1933, when she was starring at the Cotton Club, she began broadcasting twice a week over the NBC network. And that made her the first Black woman to have a regular radio show over a major network. And Stormy Weather, as we talked about earlier, was her theme song. She began negotiating for another contract to broadcast over CBS, but stations in Georgia and Florida didn't want any part of it since they thought a white orchestra shouldn't play for a Black performer. But she did do other radio appearances in the 30s and 40s as a singer. And on June 14th, 1939, the Ethel Waters Show was broadcast, which was a variety special. And these were the very, very early days of NBC television. So NBC radio already existed, but NBC television was just getting up and going. When she was doing The Member of the Wedding on Broadway, she began a role in the television comedy Beulah. Beulah ran from 1950 to 1953 on ABC, but Ethel wasn't part of it the whole time. She played in it as Beulah until 1952, and then she was replaced with another actor. But it was about a domestic worker named Beulah and the white family that she worked for. And it was the first nationally broadcast weekly TV series starring a Black American. And after that show ended, it was a while until there was another regular series that starred a Black woman. And that was Julia, which came out in 1968. So she appeared in other radio dramas and dramatic roles on television. But her last appearance on the stage on Broadway was in 1953. And that was in her one-woman show called At Home with Ethel Waters, about her, exactly what it sounds like. So yeah, she had a long career, but it did have its ups and downs. She ended up publishing an autobiography, His Eyes on the Sparrow, in 1951, which she co-authored with journalist Charles Samuels. And later on, so around 20 years later, 1972, she came out with another autobiography called To Me is Wonderful. But even though she had this commercial success and success in her artistry, by 1955, she was in debt and she owed taxes, and she even ended up going on a game show to get some extra money. But yeah, she kind of switched it up in her later part of life. And you see her, so this influence that Christianity had on her throughout her whole life, she was always a spiritual woman. So God was always something she was considering. But in the later part of her life, it was something that she really gravitated toward. And in the late 1950s, she started touring with the evangelist Billy Graham's Crusades. And you can see videos of her singing as part of this. And in the 1960s and 70s, she went on different variety and talk shows. But some of the other work that she was doing in entertainment was slowing down. And her last TV appearance was in 1976. And the next year, on September 1st, 1977, she died. So there is a quote from the author, Donald Bogle, about her legacy. He said that she emerged as perhaps television's most distinctive and important African-American star of the Eisenhower decade. Not only the one African-American actress immediately known by face and name to the ever-growing television audience, but also the one Black actress who played a series of dramatic roles. Most significantly, Ethel Waters helped bridge the pre-war and post-war eras, leading to more modern depictions of African-American women. And that's the end of his quote. And I just wanted to contextualize that from a person who has done a lot of studying on Ethel Waters' biography and her history, because I think it's not easy to condense a story that is as, like, has so many multitudes as Ethel Waters does into this short period of time. that we have today. It was such a long and varied history of who she was personally and how she presented through the work that she did to the public, but also just to the significance of the work that she did, which can't be understated because she was a pioneer in these fields. And also she did a lot of work to change the genres that she worked in and how Black women showed up to the characters that they were playing and the types of roles that were available to people. And the importance of her work in this kind of transitional period for entertainment. So she was credited and she did receive her flowers and the work that she did and was inducted into some halls of fame. But yeah, she was part of this history of other Black women entertainers who started out in vaudeville and kind of moved on to other roles in film and theater. And we've even talked about other people in some previous episodes of Female First that were also in these realms. So people like Cecilia Jones, who we talked about, Madame Sultawan, who was an actress, and also Ellen Armstrong, who was a magician, who were also made their ways in the performance fields, their respective performance fields. So yeah, I recommend going back and listening to those episodes too if you're interested in acting and singing and dancing and magic and other fields of performance that Black women were working in. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, we always recommend going back and listening to every episode Eve is on, Female First, which we do. We like to rerun them a lot because the conversations we have in them are so important and still ongoing to this day. So for sure, go check them out. I still think we're reaching another milestone. So we'll have a celebration.
Yes.
I also want to point out that one of my favorite authors, which is Carson McCullers, who is the author of The Member of the Wedding, when you were talking about it, I was like, ooh, I know this one.
Yeah, nice.
I got very excited for a minute. I'm like, oh, because her, as you were saying, and as Ethel Waters has said, she's not spiritual. Actually, she becomes anti-spiritual, essentially, towards the middle of her career. Most of her books kind of is satire against religion. So I was like, she understood. She understood what that was about.
Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder what was going through her mind when she was, while she was changing her mind. Like, right. What did they say exactly to convince her that it was like more spiritual than she saw and look at it this way?
That is, when you said that, I was like, what part to that would have been more spiritual, I wonder?
I love this.
Yeah.
I was going to ask at the beginning, because I know you both know more about musicals than I was, if you would recognize any of this stuff. So that wasn't I was thinking.
Because it's not a musical. That's, that's the other part to that. It's pretty, it's a short story. It's like a one-act play, essentially. But yeah, it's not a musical. Carson McCullers never wrote musicals, but it was written as a play originally, for sure. Mm-hmm. I've definitely heard these songs, but I don't know if I've actually heard the Ethel Waters rendition of Story Waters, now that you say it. Now I'm going to have to go find it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody should listen to her singing.
For sure. I'm very excited. I love when doing research involves kind of like listening to music or like looking at art or reading a poem or something. So always good. But yeah, this was a fascinating history. I'd heard of Ethel Waters, but I didn't know all of this. So this is, once again, Eves, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For bringing this. Yeah, we always love having you. Where can the good listeners find you?
You can find me at evesjeffcoat.com. So you can pretty much get anywhere from there. I'm on Instagram at notapologizing and on Twitter at evesjeffcoat. And you can also find me on many other episodes of Sminty doing Female First about plenty of other women, like some of the ones I mentioned at the end of this episode. And you can go check those out. They're there for your listening pleasure.
They are. They are. Well, thank you again, Eves. And if you would like to contact us, you can. Our emails, stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at Momstuff Podcast or on Instagram and TikTok. That's Stuff I've Never Told You. We're also on YouTube. We also have a book. You can pre-order it at stuffyoushouldreadbooks.com. We also have a Tee Public store. I'm wearing some new merch right now, so you should check that out. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.